Hello, this is UU Todd Phillips, the golden voice of the Great Southwest. And once again, you're listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. The last words your mother ever uttered was, "Tell my boy I want him to come back." My eyes are blurred, I cannot see the paper while I'm writing you this letter edged in black. Those harsh words, I'm sorry they were spoken. You know I didn't mean them, don't you, Jack? The angels bear me witness, I am asking your forgiveness in this letter edged in black. Well, here we are again. I just got back from the great state of Maine, where I gathered a lot of good music. My wife and I, Joanna, spent a week back there in those small towns, and I am working on putting together a whole program of the music and the stories that we found up there. I'm here in the studios of KVMR. Me, Steve Baker, who's engineering. That was the music of the Borsdorfs, which I love to listen to. That little thing at the beginning, that was a fragment of a grand old song called The Letter Edged in Black, and I'll explain to you why that's there. As I say, we're in community radio station KVMR, Nevada City, California, a radio station which, as an act of penance, is sponsoring an entire bluegrass festival. Here in Nevada City, the foothills of the Sierra up here in the mountains, I was glad to get home. My corn is now in the middle, toward the middle of June, knee high. In other words, I'm a month ahead of the season. I went out, well, as soon as I got home, I put my scarecrow up, the one I used last year. My scarecrow last year was so ugly. It was so ugly.
How ugly was it, Utah?
Well, it was so ugly, it not only didn't steal the corn, it brought back the corn it stole the year before. That's hard to believe. Well, now, the letter edged in black. It's a song that I have treasured for many, many years, unabashedly sentimental. One might say wallowing in maudlin sentimentality. So many of those old songs seem to be that way. You don't hear them much anymore, The Baggage Coach Ahead or Mother the Queen of My Heart. The old heart songs, all the way back to Victorian times, they are well-meant songs. They are songs that held a lot of meaning for enormous numbers of people. Today, I don't know. I can't put my finger on what's changed exactly, but those songs moved people in very powerful ways a long time ago. Now, as when I left Utah and tried singing them, songs have been with me all my life on the stage, in the city, in the coffee houses, in the folk music clubs. They could only be sung as novelty songs because people laughed at them. That's one of the reasons I stopped doing them. I'm going to do something remarkably courageous right now. Rather than sprinkling these songs out over a period of a year, over a period of 10 or 12 shows, I'm going to do an entire hour of these old sentimental songs and ballads, songs, as I say, dear to my heart. And I'm going to talk a little bit about, I don't know, about what they mean, about where they came from. I remember singing up in Camp Killcare, Summit County in Utah. No, it was Daggett County, and I'd sing in the beer bars, the 3.2 bars, and they would come in, the farmers, and they would sit there on the bar stools and listen to these old songs, and they would weep, and they would ask for them over and over again. One time, I was teaching guitar there at Southeast Music. And it was Roy Pia's music store there on 9th South in Salt Lake. I had a fellow who was a house painter by the name of Dave Mort. And he knew a lot of old-time music, and I was teaching him how to play it on the guitar. I said, "Dave, why is so much of this old-time music about death? Why is it so much about dying parents, about dying animals, about hard times and hardship?" He said, "Well..." He thought about it for a bit, said, "Well, sometimes things happen to you that that you just simply can't forget. And as long as you got to remember them, you might as well remember them in a halfway pleasing form." Well, some years later, I was singing one of these songs, and I saw a person, an older fellow who was really, really moved by it. I was moved by one of these songs. You know, I always did think that the sadness in these songs was not really in the song, but came from someplace else. I talked about this to that elderly gentleman who really treasured these old songs. He said, "We were brought up to mostly hide our emotions. These songs were permission to let them out. When I heard one, then whatever I needed to cry about, well, I could." Let's start off with one I was certainly glad I stumbled onto. I'd been missing from my life for a long time. Early Grandpa Jones, "I'm Tying the Leaves."
Playmates were they, girl and lad. She's home today, lad feels sad. Doctor who comes whispers low, when last autumn leaves fall and she must go. Lad with a tear climbs a tree. "I'll keep her here," murmurs he. Big man in blue sternly cries, "What are you doing up there?" Lad replied, "I'm sad, mother grieves day by day. Watching the leaves, here's boy say, you must not cry, for you see, I've tied all the leaves fast upon the tree. Doctor brings joy one sad day. Mother tells boy, Nell will stay." Lad at girl's side shouts with glee, "That's what I said one day up in the tree. I'm tying the leaves so they won't come down, so the wind won't blow them away. For the best little girl in this wide, wide world is lying so ill today. Her young life must go when the last leaves fall. I'm fixing them fast so they'll stay. I'm tying the leaves so they won't come down, so Nelly won't go away."
Now, I think that's a wonderful song. That tradition of those songs goes way, way back, of course, into the vaudeville times. And, of course, there was a time when kids went to school when they were taught to develop their memory, to memorize things, rather than assigning information to books or, as we do today, to computers, would stand up and declaim. And there were competitions for standing up and being able to recite by rote the Wreck of the Hesperus, "The Boy Stood on the Burning Deck." And then into vaudeville, "The Curfew Must Not Ring Tonight," and all of those late Victorian recitations. I was at a Vaudeville Nouveau, that's a new vaudeville conference down there in San Francisco, of people who work from the street to the halls. They're talking about latter-day jugglers and mimes and sword swallowers, fire breathers, and so on. The Vaudeville Nouveau, we had a conference, and one of the questions that came up was, what's the difference between vaudeville today, the Vaudeville Nouveau, and the vaudeville back then? And I think it was Jeff Raz, who was with the Pickle Family Circus lately, said that the difference seemed to be that no matter what we were doing, whether we were working as magicians or as jugglers or mimes, that what we were doing was all grounded in humor, in the ability to make people laugh, and that vaudeville had those recitations. Vaudeville had those moments of drama, the recitation, when people were indeed deeply moved. So there was vaudeville was laughter as well as deep sadness. One of the first of these that I ever learned, that I ever heard, Cousin Ray's Record Bar in Salt Lake City, when they started coming out with the LPs, put all of the old 78s out on tables and on the middle of the street and sold them for a nickel apiece. And that's where I first bought this old record, 78. A pre-smoked sausage Jimmy Dean, his recitation of Grasshopper McLean.
"Me and that Navy ain't speaking. That sailing, I tell you, I'm through. On the advice of a doc, I got me a shop. I had to have something to do. These nerves I've got are from soaking too long when a ship got hit by a plane. And right here, about 4 years back, I met Grasshopper McLean. The sun was a-burning and the desert red hot, and his mother drove in with a flat. She went inside to cool off with a beer, and I saw her kid in the back. He lay on the seat in the sweltering heat with hair the color of flame. A red-headed mite, but smiling and bright, was little old Grasshopper McLean. I fixed her tire and was toting him round when she asked me how much she owed. I just laughed and said, oh, I'll settle for him. And to my surprise, she drove off down the road. I figured she'd sober and come hurrying back. But for 3 long years, she never came. And all that time, I was mother and dad to little old Grasshopper McLean. I'd tell him of ships I'd sailed on the seas when I put him to bed at night. And that freckle-faced kid was sharp as a tack and quick as a mate for a fight. I thought I'd wait till he growed a bit and let him pick out his own name. One day he came in with a bug in his hand and he said, me, Grasshopper McLean. Oh, he'd mimic my walk and he'd mimic my talk. Like my shadow, he'd just tag me around. He even had to be checked every time I was checked by the Navy doc over in town. The doc would laugh and thump his little old chest and say, feller, you're right as rain. Then he'd turn to me and tell me that I'd be a new man thanks to Grasshopper McLean. I guess you wonder why I'm telling you this. Well, that's why I'm here doing time. For a bang and a sheriff and a red-headed dame that came to take what was mine. Ah, but you should have seen the way he fought. You could tell that kid was Navy trained. But this lonely cell wouldn't be so much like hell if I only had Grasshopper McLean.
Little old Grasshopper McLean, Jimmy Dean. A lot of times these songs are warning songs. The old ballad tradition from the Scottish and the English, there was a type of ballad was called a warning song, where the last verse was, take warning, ye young maidens, or take warning about this or about that. Here, in this kind of music, the warnings were about things pretty more immediate in your life, like take warning about liquor, take warning about giving yourself away to gambling, or giving yourself away to the loose life. And almost invariably, these warnings came from your mother. Let's listen to one of those warning songs here, Ramblin' Jack Elliott. It is time to congratulate Ramblin' Jack Elliott on his wedding. Ramblin' Jack just got married here in California, and we wish him and his bride, Jan, an enormous bliss, and we hope they are connubialing blissfully. Let's listen to old Jimmy Rogers' tune, Ramblin' Jack Elliott singing Mother, the Queen of My Heart.
I had a home out in Texas, down where the blue bonnets grew. I had the kindest old mother, how happy we were, just we two. Then one day the angels called her, that debt we all have to pay. She called me close to her bedside, these last few words to say. Son, don't start drinking and gambling, promise you'll always go straight. passed since that parting. That promise I broke, I must stay. I started gambling far past time. At last I was just like them all. I bet my clothes and my money, not dreaming that I'd ever fall. One night I bet all my money, nothing was left to be seen. And all that I needed to break them was one card, and that was a queen. The cards were dealt all round the table. Each man took a card in the draw. I drew the one that would beat them. I turned it and here's what I saw. I saw my mother's picture, and somehow she seemed to say, "Son, you have broken your promise." So I tossed the cards away. My winnings I gave to a newsboy. I knew I was wrong from the start, and I'll never forget that promise to my mother, the queen of my heart. I deedle
That's a very, very old Ramblin' Jack Elliott. That came, he recorded that a long, long time ago. Sometimes Octave Mort said that things happen in your life that you can't forget. So the songs help you to remember them in a way that's passable, a way that you can accept. True things happen in lives, in people's lives, and they will endow one of these songs with the meaning that most other people would take just as rampant sentimentality, just as trash. Well, I'm going to give you an example here. I've played in the past the music of Baby and Virginia, Reverend Baby Hoover and her partner Virginia, who are two blind women, elderly women, who sing on the streets of New York, one keeping rhythm with coins in her cup and the other one playing the accordion. They were finally recorded by Philo Records, a fine organization in northern Vermont, which, alas, has perished. Well, while she was up there, Reverend Virginia Hoover, or Baby Hoover, she described what her life was like when she was a girl. Went through blind school, boarded in with her aunt and uncle who ran a restaurant. 17 years old, she became pregnant and was turned out of the house. She had to go to a laying-in home, which turned out to be a black market home for babies, and without her knowledge, her baby was sold away from her. Well, there she was working the streets in New York City, singing gospel music, running a little storefront mission, and she said, Her whole little apartment, by the way, was full of dolls, all kinds of little dolls. She said, I've done without many a meal to have some dolls, because, you know, I figured I could eat later, you know, when I made some more money, but I wanted the dolls then. I imagined, of course, that they were real children. I know they're not, but my mind began to heal itself when I found out that, look, what was this, I said to myself, what is this doll buying spree you're on? You act like there's no tomorrow. You know, I just kind of took myself in line and said, look, you know, this has got to stop. I just kept having that baby over and over and over again. You know, it left a lot of scars on my life. And I just had to, you know, thank God I finally got over it. Well, now, she said that, and then she recorded this song for us, old Jimmy Rogers song, called The Lullaby Yodel. There's a little skip in this, but don't let it bother you.
the young people nowadays think that they're quite up to date with their abortions and illegitimate children. But way back when, I had a precious little baby outside wedlock, and they took it away from me. And I loved this baby very much. It was a little girl. And she was very pretty. Of course, I'd think she was, naturally. And this song, that this lullaby yodel, sort of makes me think of that. My baby, I know that you want me each lonely night and day. Your dear blue eyes, how they haunt me, though you're far away. Oh, why did they take you away from my arms and leave nothing to cherish there? They left me so blue, but when they took you too, it seemed more than I could bear. My baby, I want you tonight, dear, after my work is through, to rock you to sleep in my arms, dear, and sing lullabies to you. I dream of your baby caresses, dimples and golden hair. I reach out to clasp you in my arms and find only emptiness there. Your future has been the chief aim of my life. You'll never know what it means. My plans and my schemes are all blasted, it seems, for you are mine only in dreams. My baby, I want you tonight, dear, after my work is through, to rock you to sleep in my arms, dear, and sing lullabies to you.
Reverend Baby Hoover, well, you see what I mean. That song means a great deal to her, as it should. That reality will sneak up on you. Well, let's see. There are stories waiting to have songs written. A story came up when I was visiting in Seattle. A little boy was asked to give his little sister a transfusion in order to save her life. And he thought about it and brooded about it and said yes, and he was in the hospital, and she was getting the transfusion from him, and he looked at the doctor and said, "When am I going to start to die?" Now, that's a real story, and that's a very moving story. Why shouldn't that be made into a song? And why shouldn't it be made to move people? I kind of lose the thread of this when I listen to this this music. Another real story. Now, maybe you can help me with this. You know, in your collective wisdom, the people who listen to this show know all things. So if I want to learn something, I have only to ask. A long time ago, either in Arkansas or Missouri, was there really a trial of a dog? It might have been old dog Trey. It might have been old Yeller. And that's where the lawyer, this might have been in the 1880s, the dog's lawyer stood up and pronounced those words, "A dog is a man's best friend." Did that really happen? I would like to have the story. I would like to have the song that goes with it, so could you help me on that? A dog is a man's best friend. Well, Groucho Marx said, outside of a dog, a book is a man's best friend. Inside of a dog, it's too dark to read. Let's listen to an old Red Foley and W. Arthur song about a dog. Yeah, my rambling Jack Elliott. We did this. We were doing a show together on the stage of that theater Garrison Keillor used to have in Minneapolis, the World Theater. Rambling Jack Elliott singing Old Shep.
When I was a lad, an old Shep was a pup. Over hills and mountains we'd stray. Just a boy and a dog, we were both full of fun.
and we grew up together that way. I remember the time by the old swimming hole, when I would have drowned beyond doubt. But old Shep was there, to the rescue he came. He jumped in and helped pull me out. Years rolled on by and old Sheppy grew old. His eyesight was fast growing dim. Then one day the doctor looked at him and said, I can't do no more for him, Jim. And with hands that were trembling, I picked up my gun and I aimed it at Shep's faithful hand. But I just couldn't do it, I wanted to run. I wish they would shoot me instead. I went to his side and I sat on the ground. Old Shep laid his head on my knee, and I stroked the best pal a man ever had. I cried till I scarcely could see, for old Sheppy, he knew he was going to go. He reached down and looked at my hand. Then he looked up at me, just as much as to say, we're parting, but I understand. Now old Sheppy is gone, where the good dog is gone, and no more with old Shep will I roam. But if dogs have a heaven, one thing I know, Ole Shep has a wonderful home.
Fresno had learned to play so much of that really fine Mexican music while he was working the cantinas and the bars all around Fresno. During all of his life, I guess he's in his mid-70s along about now. Hey, if you're listening to this program, Loafer's Glory, for the first time, it's not always like this, you know. I do a song, stories, poems, all kinds. Other people will tell you in other places that it's not always like this. And I'm not making excuses or apologies for any of this music. God knows I'm not going to do that. I love it too much. This is just something that I've always felt that I needed and wanted to do, because it's a kind of music which is vanishing, and a kind of sentiment that's also vanishing. And truth to tell, I do miss it. We're going to listen to one of the first songs that I ever learned in my life when I was tramping up in Yellowstone, a young fella trying to learn to play the guitar, gone up on the freight train. The old fellas who worked on road crews, mainly alcoholics, all they could do is shovel gravel, would sit around a fire and swap these old songs. And that's where I first learned this one. The railroad is a big part of the sentimental songs of that era of song making, the great train wreck songs. This song here, called The Lightning Express, well, this is, you're going to have to listen close to this one. It's hard to understand because there's a dobro in there that kind of gets in the way. This is recorded at a kitchen table in Scobie, Montana. Wayne Dickerson is an older fellow, and Dobro Dick Diloff, they call themselves together the Double D Wranglers. Well, here's some of those kitchen recordings I always like to play. I'm not real long on engineering standards, but you pay close attention, you'll get something out of this song, The Lightning Express.
The Lightning Express from the depot so grand, just started out on its way. And most of the passengers who were on board seemed to be happy and gay. A little boy sat on the seat by himself and reading a letter he had. It was plain to be seen by the tears in his eyes, the contents of the which made him sad. A stern old conductor then started to take a ticket from everyone there, and finally reaching the side of the boy, roughly demanded his fare. "I have not a ticket," the little boy said, "but I'll pay you someday. I must put you off at the next station then, but stop when he heard the boy say, 'Please, Mr. Conductor, don't put me off of the train. The best friend I have in this whole wide world is lying so ill today, expecting to die any moment. He may not live through the day. Bid mother goodbye, sir, before God takes her away." Before I left home and needed a doctor's care, I came to the city employment to see, but didn't find any work there. This morning a letter from a sister arrived, "Come home, mother's dying," they say, "and that is the reason I'm asking to ride, though I haven't the money to pay." A young maiden sitting close by then exclaimed, "If you put the boy off, it's a shame." And taking her hat, the collection she made, which soon paid his way on the train. "I'm obliged to you, miss, for your kindness to me. You're welcome," she said, "never fear." Each time the conductor
The best friend I have in this whole wide world is life so ill today. Expecting to die any moment, she may not live through the day. I want to bid mother advise her before God takes her away.
The Lightning Express from the Depot Soul Grand. I have a great fondness for that song. That song edges, it's part of that group of songs, of which there are many that edge close to a kind of class consciousness. People looking out for each other when they're in a jam. Here, the young woman takes up a collection and pays his way on the train because, for reasons that are not explained in the song, he's had to leave the farm and go to the city to find work, but he couldn't find any work there. You see what I mean? You can see how that song would have great appeal to people who were having a hard time getting through the world and didn't have much of any way to really express it. The railroad. Now, there have been some pretty bad train wrecks lately. You've read about them in the newspaper, but you know, songs about those train wrecks are not going to percolate up on the radio. It's gone by the board. The whole idea of doing that has passed away. I guess if there are going to be songs written about those train wrecks, people like me are going to have to write them. Well, I probably better get busy. But gee, I remember the wreck of the Royal Palm and Red River Dave McHenry's, the freight wreck of the Altoona. Of course, the wreck of the old 97, which came from a true story. The wreck of the number 9. Good heavens. I think my favorite song, if somebody say, hey, Utah, what's your favorite song? The favorite song of all time. I would say for the sentiment that it carries, for its structure, for the way the story is told, that it's one of those train wreck songs I think was the best song that I ever heard. It's an old Carter family song. You're going to listen to it sung by a wonderful singer, Jane Voss. Jane Voss can sing Sarah Carter better than Sarah Carter could. Jane Voss singing Jim Blake's Message.
Jim Blake, your wife is dying. Went over the wires tonight. The message was brought to the depot by a lad all trembling with fright. He entered the office crying. His face was terribly white. Send this message to Dad in his engine. Mother is dying tonight. In something less than an hour, Jim's answer back to me flew. Tell wife I'll be there at midnight. I'm praying for her too. I left my son in the office. Took the message to Jim's wife. There found the dying woman was scarce of breath and life. O'er hill and dale and valley thunders the heavy train. Its engine is sobbing and throbbing and under a terrible strain. But Jim hangs on to the throttle, guiding her crazy flight. And his voice cries out in the darkness, Godspeed the express tonight. I telephoned the doctor, how is Jim's wife, I asked. About the hour of midnight, as long as she can last. In something less than an hour, the train will be along. But here I have a message. Oh God, there is something wrong. The message reads disaster. The train is in the ditch. The engineer is dying, derailed by an open switch. Jim's wife, it is addressed. I'll meet her at midnight in heaven. Don't wait for the fast express.
Jim Blake's message. Isn't that just a peach of a song? It's just the way that song is tied together. The first of these sentimental songs, I guess people sometimes call them weepers, the first one I ever heard was when I was in grade school, and that was in Cleveland, Ohio, before we ever moved, years before we moved west. It was a cowboy song, and the teacher had an old bunch of 78 records that she played for us in class. I don't know, it's been third or fourth grade. The song she played for us was Little Joe the Wrangler, a song about a little boy whose father remarried, and his stepmother was very mean to him, so he ran away and joined a cattle drive, and there was a huge storm, and the lightning spooked the cattle, and the cattle ran off, and the little boy got onto a horse and ran to head off the lead steer and was trampled to death. And, boy, I thought that was the saddest thing I'd ever heard in my life. You know, it's a story that haunted me, as it would any little kid. Well, it was after we moved to Utah, years and years later, after I'd tramped around, it's in the early 1960s, I ran into Bob Diener. Now, Bob Diener was a large man with these massive hands. He braided cable, industrial slings with his hands, but he was still pretty nimble on that guitar. He'd also worked on the ranches down in San Juan County, Utah, and he sang me the sequel to Little Joe the Wrangler, which I had never heard, Little Joe the Wrangler's Sister Nell. The song is supposed to allegedly have been written by cowboy Jack Thorpe, who was a legendary cowboy over in Nevada, but he always denied that he had written this song. Well, let's listen to the best, to my way of thinking, the best of the cowboy singers, Don Edwards, singing Little Joe the Wrangler's Sister Nell.
She rode up to the wagon as the sun was going down. A slender little figure dressed in gray. We'd asked her to get down a while and pull up to the fire, and Red Hot Chuck would soon be on the way. An old slouch hat with a hole on top was perched upon her head. Wore a pair of bull-hide chaps well greased and worn. An old twin rig all scratched and scarred from working in the brush, and a slick McGee rope tied to her saddle horn. She said she rode from Llano 400 miles away. Her pony was so tired he wouldn't go. She asked if she could stay a while and kinda rest him up, then maybe she could find her brother Joe. We could see that she'd been crying, her little face was sad. When she talked, her upper lip, it trembled so. She was the living image, we all saw it at a glance, of our little lost horse herder, Wrangler Joe. We'd ask where Joe was riding, if she knew the outfit's brand. Yes, his letter said it was the Circle Bar. It was mailed from Amarillo about 3 months ago, from a trail herd headed north to Cinnabar. I looks at Jim, he looks at Tom, and Tom looks back at me. There was something in our hearts we couldn't speak. She said that she got worried when she never heard no more, and things at home got tougher every week. You see, my mother died, she said, when Joe and I was born. And Joe and I was twins, her story ran. Then Daddy ups and marries, and he gets another wife. And then it was our troubles all began. She beat us and abused us and starved us most of the time, 'cause she never had no children of her own. Nothing Joe or I could do would ever be just right. Then Joe pulls out and leaves me all alone. I give the kid my bedroll, and I bunks in with Jim. We planned and schemed and talked the whole night through, as to which of us would tell her the way that Joe was killed, and break the news as gently as we could. I'll wrangle in the morning, boys, she says as she turns in. I'll have the horses at the wagon for its day. As the morning star was rising, I saw the kid roll out, saddle up the gray night horse and ride away. Soon we heard the horses coming, heading into camp. 'Twern't daylight, but we plainly heard the bell. And then someone a-crying, a-coming on behind. It was little Joe the wrangler's sister Nell. We couldn't quite console her, she'd seen the horse's brand as she drove them from the river bank below. From the look upon our faces, she seemed to realize that she ne'er again would see her brother Joe.
Little Joe the Wrangler's sister Nella. Another peach of a song. I think that that's just good poetry. Pardon me, but I think that's just a good piece of poetry. You know, given that the capacity for that kind of emotion exists, that the deep sentiment that people experienced listening to this kind of music could be mobilized, could be used like around a war. And yes, I know that it was the Fiery Bear. I saw Jefferson at Guadalcanal. A whole bunch of songs that are, yeah, they're right sentimental songs, but the effect of which is to really help the war effort. During the Second World War, for instance, T. Texas Tyler, I'm his namesake, you Utah Phillips, by the way, in case you didn't know that. T. Texas Tyler recorded The Deck of Cards. It was a recitation about a boy in the Italian campaign coming out of North Africa who used a deck of cards for his Bible and was going to be thrown into the stockade unless he was able to explain why he used a deck of cards as a Bible. Well, that during my war, which is the Korean War, that was rewritten and then recorded by Tex Ritter again as a Cold War kind of propaganda piece, although I'm sure he didn't intend it that way. That's sure the way I took it. But I do have that here, Tex Ritter singing from Korea, The Red Deck of Cards.
I was there as they came through Freedom Gate, shattered, sick, and lame. And there in a Red Cross tent, as a weary group rested, a soldier broke out a deck of cards. A look of hate crossed the tarred face of one boy as he sprang up, knocking the cards to the ground. As the cards lay around, many of them face up, he picked up the ace and began. "Fellows," he said, "I'm sorry, but I hate cards. The commies tried to use them to teach us their false doctrine. They told us the ace meant that there is but one God, the state. We knew that to be untrue, for we were religious boys. And the deuce meant that there were two great leaders, only two, Lenin and Stalin, and we couldn't swallow that either. And this tray stood for the three religious superstitions that the Reds would soon destroy, the Catholic, the Protestant, and the Jewish. This black four," the soldier boy continued, "stood for the four corners of the earth, where the hammer and sickle would soon reign supreme. There in that prison camp, far away from home, we hoped it was a lie. And this red five was the 5 points in their red star." Tears were streaming down the boy's face as he picked up the six. "And this six," the commies told us, "stood for the 6 and final wars that America had luckily won. The Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, the Civil War, the Spanish-American War, World War I, and number 6, World War II. Now in this war, this Cold War, America would be destroyed. And the 7 stood for our 7th foolish day, Sunday, which we wasted on our Lord. The 8 stood for the 8 hours every day we would have to spend learning to be progressives. The nine for the cat o' nine tails lashed across our backs if we ever knelt to pray. The ten was to remind us that our Ten Commandments were ten stupid rules that only capitalistic fools believed in. That's what they told us. The Jack meant that Christ was a knave of uncertain birth. The Queen that Mary his mother was a non-virtuous woman, and the King stood for our Lord God, whom the commies told us did not exist, a dream, a fake, a joke. That's what they told us. The heart stood for Christ's blood, all shed in vain. The diamond signified the real precious jewel, the Communist Party. The club, the weapon of oppression with which they beat us. And the spade, a tool with which we would dig our own graves. This was the red deck of cards. And so you see, fellas, the soldier boy said, that's why I hate cards. His buddies picked up the cards, tore them into pieces, and with shining faces walked arm in arm toward a simple chapel in Korea.
Well, Jesus Christ. I mean, yeah, I was there, friends. I grew out of that one, I tell you, but that kind of music is a propaganda, and that's the part of it, thankfully, that seems to have vanished from our musical horizons these days. Look, I'm going to wind this down. Another song that I learned, probably one of the first songs that I ever learned. I appreciate having the opportunity to share these songs and these ideas with you. Listen, this is the kind of music, and those of you who are listening to Loafer's Glory for the first time, this is true. I'm going to play you music that is never played, that we don't hear anymore, but is part of the warp and woof, the fabric of all of our lives, of our American lives. I used to get off the freight trains in Pocatello, Idaho. I'd walk down under the railroad bridge. There was, and built into one of the bridge abutments was a bar called Bob and Ray's. And it'd be sometime be along about midnight. I'd step in out of the rain, or step in out of the cold. The railroaders were on there to have a drink before they went home. They would sit with their back to me, and I'd set up my guitar, and I'd sit down and start to play songs. And they would either push drinks to the end of the bar or throw money into my guitar case so that I'd be able to leave town. I'd sing these old heart songs, and I could tell that they were moved. I could watch their shoulders move as they wept, even though they never turned around and looked at me. I'd play you the one song that always made me enough money to be able to leave town. Clarence C. Snow's The Drunkard's Son. Through the old dusty attic of a tenement house, I happened to wander one day. And there on the rafters, midst shaven tin chips, a drunkard's poor little boy lay. Oh, why are you lying up here in the cold? What makes you lie on this hard bed? My daddy's a drunkard and he beat me today. My darling old mother is dead. I'm hiding from father and please, sir, don't tell. He beat me 'cause I would not steal. He said he would kill me the next time I failed, and I'm so afraid, sir, he will. I'm leaving you here, son, I sadly replied, but I will be back right away. But oh, when I returned to the attic, I found that Jesus had been there that day. The chips and the shavings were there as before. The little boy lay on his bed with tears on his cheeks and his hands at his side. The poor little feller was dead. A picture of mother lay close to his heart, a faint little note by his head. When I opened the paper, my eyes filled with tears, for these are the words that I read. I'm hiding with Jesus across the divide, with dear mother forever I'll dwell. And thank you, dear mister, for your kindness to me. And now it's all right if you tell. Well, this has been Utah Phillips with Loafer's Glory, the Hobo Jungle of the Mind. The old guy waxes labile. Read 'em and weep. You can't cry over spilt milk. I wouldn't waste any tears on that. Quit your bawling, I'll really give you something to cry about. Don't be such a crybaby. Okay, sister, turn off the waterworks. Cry, uncle. Okay. Uncle, listen, friend, if you can't find something to cry about, you better clean your attic.